तत्सवितुर्वरेण्यं भर्गो देवस्य धीमहि धियो यो न प्रचोदयात्। ॐ मे वी मेडिटेट ऑन दैट सुप्रीम बीइंग हु ड्वेल्स इन द हार्ट्स ऑफ ऑल। He is the source and sustenance of this universe. In Him we live, move, and have our being. May He illumine our hearts, and may He guide us in every way. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Peace, peace. Began this study of Viveka Chudamani, or Tress Jewel of Discrimination, by the great seer philosopher Shankara. And we have seen that there are three conditions necessary to attain liberation or union with God. Liberation and union with God, or what you may call salvation in the Christian language, pertain to the same thing. Salvation or liberation comes only through our realization of our identity with God. In other words, we have to realize and experience how the divinity, how God, is dwelling within each one of us. And that is our real self. That is our true being. When that experience comes, it is then only that there is salvation and liberation. And there are only three conditions necessary for that. One is human birth. Next is, you must have the longing for that. You must desire for that. Thirdly, you must have association with a holy man, with a man of God. These three conditions have to be fulfilled. So, Shankara says, only through God's grace may we obtain those three rarest advantages: human birth, the longing for liberation, and discipleship to an illumined teacher. You see, why is there to be a discipleship to an illumined teacher? The truths are written in the scriptures. And we have examples in Christ and Buddha and Ramakrishna and many other great teachers who had lived. But that doesn't help. You have to have a contact. You see, there is the potentiality in every one of us. The candle is there. It has to be lighted. But another light is needed to light that candle. And so again, religion is something that is transmitted. And who can transmit that? Only one who has that power to transmit. And one who has that power? One who has attained God. One who has realized God. And so these are the three conditions. Human birth, which we all have, but rare is it, longing for liberation. And when there comes that longing for liberation, you see, even God comes down as teacher to teach us. You meet your teacher. That is the law. Then he says, nevertheless, there are those who somehow manage to obtain this rare human birth. Of course, you know, Shankara says, who somehow obtain. But almost plentiful people, you know, there's overpopulation. There are those who somehow manage to obtain this rare human birth, together with bodily and mental strength and understanding of the scriptures. You see, there are people who have the understanding of the scriptures and yet are so deluded that they do not struggle for liberation. Such men are suicides. They clutch at the unreal and destroy themselves. You see, that is the point. It has to come from inside, the longing, the desire for God. But again, I must tell you that it's a very, very rare thing, this great longing, this great yearning. And it comes only when you have practiced spiritual disciplines for years and years. When this longing comes, when this yearning comes, then there's not much time needed to get the illumination. When you have that yearning, that longing, that restlessness for God, I can't live without God for a moment. This life is wasted in vain if I can't find Him. When you have that yearning, you as it were suffocate without God. When that longing comes, I'd say immediately the vision opens up. And so again this longing comes only after you have gone through many spiritual disciplines. Whenever anybody would have asked Sri Ramakrishna how to find God, his one answer was, yearn with a longing heart. And the vision will open up. So just by reading scriptures, it doesn't help. As Sri Ramakrishna used to say, in the Hindu almanac is written a forecast, how many inches of rain will fall in the year. But you squeeze that almanac, not a drop falls. So the scriptures, even understanding, intellectual understanding of the scriptures, doesn't help. It's a necessary step. But unless you have that longing, and which comes only as you practice the spiritual disciplines, which Shankara will point out to us what those disciplines are. For what greater fool can there be than the man who has obtained this rare human birth together with bodily and mental strength and yet fails through delusion to realize his own highest good? You see, take for instance, just consider. You have met many people, you know many people. How many people consider the highest good as to realize God, to attain perfection in God? How many people realize that, that is the highest good and that is the purpose and goal of life and living? How many realize that? Perhaps of thousands and thousands of people, one perchance, six, to attain liberation. You see, it's a growth. It's an evolution. And one has to come to that level of growth. Then only it appeals to such people. But otherwise, that reminds me, you know, one time in Hollywood, I was talking about renunciation and a couple came, just strangers. And this I heard later, you know, of course I didn't hear it, this hearsay. And the husband said, "That's nuts." And the wife said, "You said it." So I thought that was the greatest compliment I received. Men may recite the scriptures and sacrifice to the holy spirits. They may perform rituals and worship deities, but until a man wakes to knowledge of his identity with the Atman, liberation can never be attained. No, not even at the end of many hundreds of ages. You see, you may think that, well, somebody reads the Bible every day and worship the deity. Of course, you see, that helps, that prepares the ground. But until there is the awakening within, until you reach that transcendental consciousness and realize your union with God, identity with God, I and my Father are one, there is no liberation. You know, of course, this is Shankara's. He was a non-dualist and he's giving us that highest truth, the supreme truth, and which is very true. That is the supreme truth. But there are gradations of truth again. Sri Ramakrishna used to say that there are different stages through which we pass. For instance, first, he gave the illustration. You want to see your friend, your beloved, and you come to the understanding, and somebody has told you, and you are sure that your beloved friend is living in this particular room. You have entered that room. And then it is dark. And then you begin to feel his presence. You can hear him breathe. You can feel that presence. And then you go on to find out where he is in the darkness. Then you touch a chair or a table or a desk or some books. Then you come to the bed and there you see him. You feel him. You touch him. Then he wakes up, recognizes you. And then you have union with your beloved. You see, different stages. You have become identified with that beloved. You are no longer you. The same way, we feel the presence. An actual living presence one has to feel within the shrine of his own heart. You see, as long as you say, "Oh Father, come to me," you have not yet begun your spiritual life. When you begin to feel his God, that God is within you, that is the beginning. Then go on praying, meditating. And then you come to a stage of unfoldment when you feel his presence. Yes, he's there. I can see him. I don't know him yet, but he is there. That presence is felt. And then, as that presence is felt, you begin to get a thrill inside. you know, just as in a summer weather, which is very hot, burning hot, then you come nearer to the ocean, you begin to feel the breeze of that ocean, and your whole body feels soothed and cooled. Then you know, here I have come nearer to the ocean. Same way, you get a thrill, they go into ecstasy. Then the vision of God comes. That's not enough. Then you become intimate with Him. You talk to Him. He talks to you. And then, completely, you are gone. He alone is. That is the highest attainment. The scriptures declare that immortality cannot be gained through work or progeny or riches, but by renunciation alone. Hence it is clear that work cannot bring us liberation. Now here, of course, Shankara points out, you know, that karma or karma yoga, work, is a path to gain purity of heart, selfless action, only helps to achieve purity of heart. But it does not lead you directly to the realization of God. And of course, Shankara also interprets the Bhagavad Gita to suit his philosophy. But Bhagavad Gita, you know, if we read without help of commentaries, they are very simply stated that through action, through performance of duties, in the right attitude, one can attain the highest supreme realization. And, you know, it was in this particular age again, Sri Ramakrishna and Swami Vivekananda emphasized upon that truth, karma yoga, union with God through selfless action. And I'll tell you a little historical fact. You know, this was introduced by Swamiji to the monks of the Ramakrishna order. And when the Swamis went to different places in India and opened homes of service, the sannyasins, the monks of many other orders, would look down upon us. They did not accept us socially for years. But our Swamis went on working. And then, you see, of course, these monks also got sick, and they would carry them and bring them to the home of service and nurse them. And of course, their work was not philanthropic deed. They would see the patient as God Himself. And He is serving God. And gradually they began to see the beauty, the truth. And now, of course, all these monks consider Ramakrishna as the divine incarnation and Vivekananda as an apostle, and they accept the order of Ramakrishna as one amongst them. But it took a long time, because You see, Shankara, at that period, it was necessary. He emphasized upon monastic life and only contemplative order. No service. But in this particular age again, it was Swami Vivekananda and Sri Ramakrishna, of course, that emphasized upon that truth. That through service, selfless service, by seeing God in the work, in action, in the person that you serve, you are meditating, you are worshipping God. You see the same Self, same God who is within you in every being, and you actively engage yourself in the service of God in mankind. And that would lead you to the same result, same realization and experience of God. But of course, this karma yoga that is taught in the Gita is related to devotion to God, to contemplation upon God, to identity with God. You see, they are all together. You see, as you know, there are four yogas, four paths of union. Raja yoga, path of contemplation. Karma yoga, path of selfless service. Bhakti yoga, the path of devotion. And Jnana Yoga, the path of discrimination. Shankara is emphasizing upon Jnana Yoga, path of discrimination. But Swami Vivekananda and Sri Ramakrishna emphasized the harmony of all the four yogas. Now, for instance, here, Shankara means by renunciation, monastic life. But it is not so in the Bhagavad Gita. Though Bhagavad Gita, from beginning to end, teaches renunciation, as Sri Ramakrishna said. So what is the substance, the teaching of the Bhagavad Gita? If you just utter the word Gita a few times, you get the teaching. That is Gita, 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 Tagi. You come to Tagi. Tagi means renounce. A man of renunciation. And so that is the fundamental teaching of the Gita. But Gita points out again, renunciation does not mean taking a formal monastic life. And Sri Ramakrishna explained it this way, that there are two types. There is the monastic order and there is the householder's life. You know, in ancient India, we have four stages of life. Brahmacharya, and I think Shankara was teaching from that standpoint. Student life, householder's life, retired life, then life of a monk. In other words, all ultimately had to take the monastic life. But Sri Ramakrishna pointed out for this age, there is the householder's life, there is the monastic life. Everybody does not have to be a monk. But everybody must learn to practice the ideal of renunciation. The monk renounces externally and internally. The householder renounces internally. And what is that renunciation? It is me and mine. Attachment to me and mine, this little self. That is renunciation. And of course, without that renunciation, nobody can find any truth of God. The scriptures declare that immortality cannot be gained through work or progeny or riches, but by renunciation alone. Hence, it is clear that work cannot bring us liberation. Therefore, let the wise man give up craving for pleasure in external things and struggle hard for liberation. let him seek out a noble and high-souled teacher and become absorbed wholeheartedly in the truth which is taught him. Through devotion to right discrimination, he will climb to the height of union with Brahman. You see, this is what he is emphasizing, and which is wonderful. You have to have that discrimination. Discrimination of what? Discrimination between the real and the unreal. And as you begin to discriminate between the real and the unreal, you ultimately come to this understanding that God alone is real. Because everything else is fleeting, passing away. You see, real is that which is always real. It never changes. But that which today is, tomorrow is not, you cannot call that real. So as you begin to discriminate, you realize that God alone is real. And I have known some great holy men who just always discriminating. They live in that atmosphere of discrimination, holding on to God all the time. So again, you should understand that these teachings are not merely in books. I have seen them alive. And we have to make these teachings alive in our lives. Through devotion to right discrimination, he will climb to the height of union with Brahman. By the power of the Atman, let him rescue his own soul, which lies drowned in the vast waters of worldliness. You see, here again, there is a struggle. Yes, grace of God, but where is that God? Atman, self within, God is within. And with the power of that Atman, you have to rescue yourself. You know, this is beautifully brought out in one of the Upanishads. I have often quoted those passages. You see, I didn't bring the book, so I can't give you the exact words. But here, the two birds of beautiful plumage sitting on the selfsame tree. There's the upper bird that is majestic in its own glory, calm and tranquil. The lower bird is restless, hopping from one branch to the other, eats the sweet and bitter fruits of the tree. And when it tastes a bitter fruit, it looks at the upper bird and sees how calm, how majestic, how glorious. He advances a little, again forgets, again goes on eating the sweet and fruits of the tree. Until it has eaten a very bitter fruit. Then it moves nearer and nearer and nearer. And then, lo and behold, it was the shadow of that upper bird that was playing all the time. There was just one bird, serene, majestic, glorious. And that is it. You see, this individual man really has no reality, it's a shadow. Atman, what is ego? Atman identified with the mind, senses, body, creating something that has no reality. I, this ego. Then you weep and pray to God. Where is that God? He is the Atman, your true self, your true being. You look towards Him, towards that Atman. Then you move towards Him. Gradually, the shadow has gone. You are that. Thou art that. I and my Father are one. Let the wise who have grown tranquil and who practice contemplation of the Atman give up all worldly activities and struggle to cut the bonds of worldliness. So here he of course is insisting upon this one fact, to grow. Oh, he says, of course, who have grown tranquil and who practice contemplation of the Atman give up all worldly activities and struggle to cut the bonds of worldliness. You know, this again is something, it's a stage of unfoldment. You know, how Sri Ramakrishna in his simple way used to explain all these truths. He used to give the illustration of a girl pregnant. When the girl is pregnant, well, she engages herself in little work and continues to work. And then, when she gives birth to the child, then all her activities are with the baby. She does not have to look after anything for some time. But of course, in the West, it is different. So the idea is this, that there comes a time in our life when you want to keep yourself busy in contemplation of God. Nothing else matters. But of course, you don't live in that state all the time. Again, you see, as you get illumined, again you engage yourself for the good of mankind. Then he says, right action helps to purify the heart, but it does not give us direct perception of the reality. Of course, technically he is right. But practically, you see, if you take it literally, I don't accept his words here. Right action helps to purify the heart. Yes, it purifies the heart. And when it purifies the heart, immediately there is the knowledge of God. The reality is attained through discrimination, but not in the smallest degree by 10 million acts. Well, he is right from that standpoint. 10 million acts. Acts by themselves do not give you liberation. Because just look, the whole world is active. But if you act with this attitude of worship, then you are contemplative. Your action becomes worship. And it is that worship, that contemplation, that discrimination by seeing the reality, you attain to the knowledge of God. Now may I invite questions?
The oral questions from the audience are being revoiced due to their being off mic during the original recording. The love of God seems to be a fundament of most religions. Where does this leave the non-dualist, someone like Shankara?
Yes. You see, as long as we are in the relative plane, we have to meditate upon God. You see, Shankara also says you have to contemplate upon God. Now this contemplation again is possible where there is the sense of duality. So you are not a non-dualist as long as you are following a path. You become a non-dualist when you have realized, when you have experienced God. Now, what is love? Your question I'll answer, and Shankara will answer in that very question in this book. What is the nature of love? Constant recollectedness. That's devotion, that's love. And the very nature of the Atman, whether you are discriminating and whether you are considering that as an impersonal reality or not, the nature of that is love itself, Satchit Ananda. You see, existence, knowledge, bliss and love. That's the very nature of the Atman, that's the very nature of God. As you contemplate, and if there is that constant recollectedness, and which cannot come until you have love, until you feel that love coming from the Atman or from God, and you are thrilled by that, you begin to love. But as you go on, as you struggle to think of God and think of God, you feel that love. Then there comes that interest in God, and there comes that recollectedness of God all the time. And that is the nature of love. That is the supreme love, when there is a constant recollectedness of God.
Is it possible to shift from being a dualist to a non-dualist and vice versa?
Yes, oh yes, yes. That's our teaching, is that. You see, sometimes be a dualist, sometimes again be a non-dualist. You see, for instance, in our ritual worship, you have both. You begin as a dualist, then you have to identify yourself with God, and you have to become a non-dualist in the whole process. And then again, you become a dualist, and then you offer your worship. Then you see, you bring God Himself from within the shrine of your heart into the picture. You see, you give life to the picture by bringing God from within your heart. So you see, it is very interesting that way.
Is there a play of the Lord and a play of the world?
There is a leela or play of the Lord. Play of the world is worldliness. And to be drowned in worldliness and egoism and attachment, that's the play of the world.
So when people say, when some catastrophe happens and they say, oh, it's the play of the Lord.
That's again another. That is not the play of the world. Yes, that also you can say, play of the Lord. You see a man of God who has the vision opened up, he says, sees everything as the play of the Lord. What you call as disaster, he doesn't see it as disaster. He sees it as a play, mere play of the Lord. You see, there is suffering, sorrow, nobody can deny. But then suffering and sorrow and death and destruction, these are not the ultimate. The ultimate is blissful consciousness. And so these are the stages through which the world passes or mankind passes to reach that ultimate bliss. And so, you know, for instance, surgery, and it is painful. But he comes out healthy. So a man of God sees surgery going on. Yes, it is painful. He doesn't deny that. But ultimately, it doesn't mean anything. He's passing through the door of suffering into the blissful consciousness.
Then there is no play of the world?
No, play of the world is, you see, man's ignorance is the play of the world. What is the all divine play? From the when your vision opens up, you see it is all leela, play of the divine. That's a stage of experience. You see, you cannot. There is no way when if you consider God as created this at a certain period of time, and then Adam and Eve, all that business, if you believe, then there is no explanation to the problem of suffering and evil. God is responsible for everything then. And so they had to invent a Satan, you see. And which idea, this God and Satan, this idea, the Jews took from the Zoroastrians. They were the ones who brought that idea. Good and evil, two powers exist. The Jews took that from the Zoroastrians, and Christians imitated that, accepted that verbatim in their theology, you see. And so the whole thing is a mess.
I remember someone objecting that if you lost your ego, then you lost your individuality. And you said, you have no individuality yet.
Exactly.
Can you explain that?
Now, if you can define what is your individuality, where lies your individuality, then only I can say whether you have lost it or gained it. Now, here is the point. What is your individuality? Your character. Ultimately, you have to consider your particular character, your peculiarities, your mannerisms. You see, if you say your body changes. You are not the same body. Your mind changes. Your senses and sense powers change. Everything in you that you know of as you, all the time changing. Not one moment it exists. You are losing every moment of your life. Now, the sum total of your character, which is the sum total of all your actions and thoughts, your peculiarities and mannerisms and things like that. If you call that your individuality or personality, and you don't want to lose it, all right, let me tell you, there's a thief. And his whole character is stealing. He will say, if I give up stealing, I give up my individuality. And don't you want to change? Don't you want to improve your character? So you are losing your character, not in a bad sense. But you are advancing until you free yourself from all character and all karmas and everything, and you become one with. In God alone is your individuality. In the infinite alone is your individuality. You see, I have said some time back, I remember, it was Edwin Arnold who created that mistake, in the minds of the people of the West. In talking of Buddhism, he said that the dewdrop falls into the ocean and becomes one with the ocean. Now the objection will be, the dewdrop does not want to lose its identity and get mixed with the ocean. You see, natural. But that is not it. You are not the dewdrop. You are the ocean. And you have forgotten that you are the ocean. And so, thinking yourself to be a dewdrop, you are weeping and crying and lamenting all your life. But wake up and see you are not the dewdrop, you are the ocean. हरि ओम ओम सहनाभवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ओम मे ब्रह्मन् प्रोटेक्ट अस मे ही गाइड अस मे ही गिव अस स्ट्रेंथ एंड राइट अंडरस्टैंडिंग मे वी हैव लव फॉर ऑल मे आवर स्टडी ब्रिंग लाइट अनटू अस ओम शांति 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 पीस पीस पीस